Phil Farnham, and then to bring church people to see what was going on. Because every single strike in the history of California agriculture had been crushed locally. The police were on their side, the school boards were on their sides, the county board of supervisors were on the sides of the growers, the churches were on the sides of the growers. So the growers, all they had to do was isolate this movement, bring in strike breakers, and crush it right there. And Caesar, because he read a lot of labor history and was kind of a genius of an organizer, knew that he had to spread this, the word of the strike outside of Delano. And that's probably the more important than the food, more important than the gas money, more important than staff at the beginning. Spreading the word, you know, beyond Delano was probably the most important role we played. And of course, we just by our presence, we defeated a lot of grower propaganda, right? I mean, like, Caesar's a communist. Well, people don't, there are a lot of things they don't like about the church, but they're pretty sure the church is not communist. So that kind of, it didn't eliminate that charge, but it kind of minimized that charge. And then there is no strike. These are all outside agitators. But then we had people coming to Delano and seeing strikers and going to the Friday night meetings and then telling back home there is a strike. Now, at this very time in history, the civil rights movement was going on, you know, and many church folks in California had actually been to the South, to Selma and to other places. And so they understood the way in which the local power structure tried to minimize what local poor people are doing.
You had done that too, right, Chris?
Pardon?
You had gone south also.
Yes, I did.
Freedom rider.
Yeah, from East Harlem, I went on a freedom ride to various places. That's a story unto itself.
So you were a successful propagandist from the beginning in terms of the support for the strike, right?
It's a word I hate, but it's true. She said propagandist. I was an interpreter.
That's a good propaganda.
Nothing to be, you were very good.
That's right.
There's nothing to be ashamed of.
Like the week after the strike began, before most of the state even knew there was one, we had a California church delegation in Delano. And then a couple of months later, we had a national church delegation in Delano. And then the March to Sacramento, which happened in 1966, lots of church people came and involved the National Council of Churches in the delegation, and other denominations did the same. So the word was getting out to the church that something significant was going on here.
And to the media.
At first the California media, mostly. But that's a lot of people and a lot of grapes and a lot of other agricultural products.
And I would say, I mean, by the time of the March to Sacramento, the national media was covering this. And the role of the church, which was really you to a large, I mean, all that you mobilized, was a very significant part of that story.
Yes. That raised a thought, which I've forgotten, so.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the backlash that you encountered at that point and about the opposition within the religious community to the strike?
Yes.
How Jim Drake's church wanted the Bibles back.
Jim Drake was our key staff person with Caesar in Delano. Matt, his son, is right here with his hand in the air, and his wife, Ida, and their son. And Jim was our guy in Delano. I mean, if Caesar was too busy to talk to me, Jim was always there because I sent him his paycheck. And so he would talk to me. And Jim was an ordained minister in the United Church of Christ. Not by first choice. He came from a Presbyterian church in the Coachella Valley, another major grape growing region of California. And when he went off to seminary, his local church gave him the Interpreter's Bible, the whole set of the Interpreter's Bible. And then when he joined the staff of the Migrant Ministry, they asked him to give them back. I think that's got to be a first in history. Knowing Jim, I don't think they ever found them anywhere. So Jim left the Presbyterians and joined the United Church of Christ, and that was his denomination. But because Jim was a United Church of Christ pastor, and Phil, you were too.
Well, I moved from being a Methodist to United Church of Christ.
Yeah.
I was ordained in while I was with Palmer.
Yeah. That's right. We have that wonderful picture in Fresno.
With Helen.
You look
there
very.
Three
you look,
people in the Fresno church.
You look very. You look very pious in that picture, Phil. So, what happened? Here's what happened. It took a little while, but the growers finally figured out that we had these migrant ministers in Delano, right? These radical, young, mostly white ministers supporting the strike, which first was like annoying. You know, what do these people know? Why are they here? How can they understand what's happening in the fields and in Delano? One of the Methodist ministers in town said, Delano was like a little United Nations. I mean, they just don't understand how we all love each other and get along. And on one side of the tracks, yes. So they discovered we were there. It was annoying at first, but then they discovered we were helping to spread the word outside of Delano to the rest of the religious community, and that was beyond annoying. And then they figured out that the Protestant growers figured out that their local churches, many of whom they had built with their own money, and where their kids went to Sunday school to learn how to be righteous young people, was involved in supporting the Meyer ministry. Like from the local church to the denomination to the council of churches and back to us. So one of the denominational executives figured out that it was like about 2 mils a church that actually ended up in the migrant ministry, but the grower said it doesn't matter, it's the principle of the thing. Our local church is supporting these creatures, these communist sympathizers. So so when they did that, then they almost all the valley churches passed resolutions calling on their denominations to withdraw from the Council of Churches, or at least withdraw their money from the Council of Churches, or to get the Council of Churches to put the migrant ministry out of existence. That was the battle. And then it was the San Joaquin Valley, then it was like the Napa Valley, then it was the Coachella Valley, then it was the Imperial Valley, Agricultural Valley after another one came after us in that way. So every denomination had a 2-year internal struggle over not whether farm workers should have justice, but whether the migrant ministry should exist as an arm of the churches in California. And except for one, denomination, we won all those battles. And we won all those battles because we kept the story on farm workers and the need for farm workers to organize, that they were ever going to see change in their lives. And because the rural churches were outnumbered by the urban churches. When it came to a vote in the denominational bodies, the rural churches were outvoted, except, are you Episcopalians, you guys?
Well,
except for the Episcopal Diocese of San Joaquin, which has since withdrawn from the Episcopal Church. The Episcopal Diocese was the only judicatory in California to vote against us. So we survived. And we lost a lot of money, because the migrant ministry had all these rich and historical relationships with local churches doing, you know, good things in the valleys, welcoming farm workers into the community, you know, providing all the services that we already talked about and that you can imagine. But as soon as it was clear that we were supporting Chavez, those relationships just completely died. I mean, like almost overnight. People who would talk to us wouldn't talk to us anymore. Local migrant ministry who wanted to relate to us would not relate to us anymore. That doesn't mean that there weren't individual pastors and individual lay people who stayed with it. And I learned a really valuable lesson in those early years, because I was going around, you know, interpreting why the church was involved with this. Because the growers were saying, what are they doing in a labor strike? Taking sides against one side against the other? I mean, we don't care if they take the side to the other side or this side, but they shouldn't be taking any side. Where was I going?
Well, and while you catch your breath, I will say that one of the things that Chris is too modest to say that I will say about you is that he was phenomenally successful at doing exactly what you just said, which is keeping the message on the fact that this is about justice for farm workers. It's not about, you know, who's right in this or who's wrong, but here are these people, this is how they live, this is wrong. The role, you know, our role is not to decide how best to change that. Our role is to support the people who are out there fighting the fight, right? And it's not about, you know, and if you are on the side of justice and farm workers, then you have to support us. And you just simply did not allow the debate to waver from that position. And that was a real strength.
I learned. I mean, I got better at it. One thing I learned, which was where I was going before I forgot where I was going, these huge meetings in the San Joaquin Valley at churches to discuss, you know, the issue of the farm worker strike and the church's involvement. If the migrant ministry a few years ago had come to a meeting in the Visalia Presbyterian Church, there would have been about 12 people there. So, but after the strike began, they had meetings that were like, they had to put the loudspeakers out on the lawn for all the people who came. Hardly any of them friendly to Caesar and me. And when I spoke to these groups, I remember kind of like trying to reach them. Like, you know, Republicans trying to reach them. And trying to say things that would work with anybody in the room. And then after a while I realized, you know, these folks are economically tied to this industry. They are not going to change. They can't change. So I need to talk only to the people in that room who are supporting the farm workers and the migrant ministry and make sure they get the information they need to survive in this hostile environment that they are in, this incredibly hostile environment that they're in. I can think of only one pastor in that valley who supported us, who survived in his pulpit. And Winthrop Yinger, who was a UCC minister, now dead, who went to serve the Arvin United Church, Arvin Congregational Church, which is deep in the grape, you know, vineyards of Bakersfield, Delano, and Lamont, anyway. And Arvin's famous for Grapes of Wrath, too. But anyway. Winthrop Yinger, one Sunday, he'd been there like 2 or 3 weeks in this church, and he knew about the strike. He had kind of like a social conscience. And at church on Sunday morning, he prayed for the growers and the strikers who were involved in this conflict in Delano. And after the service, the trustees called him into an emergency meeting and told him that in this church, he would not be praying for those communists in Delano. And which just shows you how polarized the situation was. He resigned the next week and became the executive of the Fresno Area Council of Churches, which was a little more open to the world around them. So anyway, but
so there you are.
Hold on, the UCCs, because Jim was there in Delano and was kind of like prominently there, Jim is the one who just started the first boycott. initiated the idea, organized it from a little telephone inside of what used to be a closet, which was his office. The United Church of Christ got it worst of all. But they had two executives who were just angels, Dick Norberg and Walter Press, who will never probably be written up in history, but they traveled the San Joaquin Valley talking to churches, telling them why they supported the migrant ministry, why it was important for Jim to be in Delano. Walter Press came from the ENR denomination that was merged with the Congregationalists to make the United Church of Christ. And anyway, he was just like this tough German theologian. Nothing could move him. And so they just hung in there, and it was awfully, awfully hard. In terms of time, as well as resources, it was just hard for them. Harder for them than for me, because I got the juice of being part of it. I mean, I could be in Delano, I could be at Friday night meetings, I could spend time with Jim and the other staff, and I could listen to Caesar tell me what was going on. I mean, I got the juice of the movement. These guys were out back there supporting us without that same juice. So a lot of brave administrators in California, and a lot not so brave. But kind of hard to blame people who get caught in a economic crunch like that.
So there you are, providing this very critical support in a very tense situation. What can you talk a little bit about the bonds that you think that fostered, that what developed both between you and Caesar, and between you and other people who were in the movement, to go through that kind of an experience? Which also included getting arrested and, you know, various other public activities, right?
Well, a lot of the people in this room know from their own experience that when you stand with workers, poor people, racial minorities, when you stand with them in times of struggle and crisis, a bond is created that is like, in a week, you can create a bond that would normally take a year to create. And friendships that would normally take a year to create are created in days. Richard, am I right? Richard Cook, a former migrant ministry staff person, has got his hand in the air. And Glenn and Sue Piercy, former UFW staff people. And
how do you think it affected your relationship with Chavez to be in the role that you were in, that early, very critical position?
My relationship with Caesar was almost, I was kind of blind, right? But blind in love with this cause, and blind in admiration for this man.
Did you differentiate between the man and the cause?
I have no idea. I do not know. I mean, I know that what happened to me eventually was not exactly, it was not entirely healthy, but I don't know the answer to that question.
Do you think it's important for people to think about, do you think there is a difference between the man and the cause, thinking about it now, and was that an issue that should have been thought about?
There were many issues that I should have thought about, but that I didn't think about. I'm glad I didn't think about it. I mean, I'm glad I had no idea what was coming when we decided to support the strike. I mean, that would have made it a very hard decision. But I didn't know. I didn't know what was coming. And so we just did what came naturally, really came naturally at the time. And in terms of, you know, understanding the history of church's involvement with poor people, especially with workers, the key thing was that we were there. We were there in the fields. We knew what it was like. We knew that things weren't going to change.
Did you really know what it was like, or did you know what it was like from Caesar?
I'm talking about my staff. Staff knew what it was like.
Right.
And from them,
and you knew
more than
them.
Caesar, I knew what it was like for people. Actually, that was fairly easy for me. thanks to my mother, I had a kind of an underdog's